What is going on, everybody? We are back after a very successful episode 4. Thank you so much to everyone who's been watching and giving us feedback. We greatly appreciate it. Onwards and upwards to episode 5 of The Grumpy Gits, or episode 1 of The Grumpy Gits. That's a fourth wall break. Enjoy it. As always, I am your glorious host, leading you through this cacophony of disability and merriment, Adam Henry Pearson, and I am not alone. Oh no, I am joined by my usual ragtag bunch of absolute legends. So first, if he were a country, he would be Italy and a rock band in Italy. We'll talk more about that later. Simon Sampson, how the Charles Dickens are you?
I'm very well, thank you, but I just want to point out I don't do cocaine.
and I'd like to point out, I don't...
Can we all get in on that?
Oh, Jesus Christ. 45 seconds, we've already been demonetized, Simon. Great job. I also don't believe you, but that's another story for another day. Move on. And also, he is an absolute legend. Best facial hair on the podcast. Duncan, please say something so we can move the hell on.
Good morning, everyone. And I hope you're well this week. I don't know how to move on from that.
And finally, I feel like I shortchanged him with his intro last week. So here goes nothing. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, the Grumpy Gits proudly brings to you the greatest editor in the world. How are you doing, Chris?
I'm all right. I'm a little bit concerned because we did mention cocaine and boys and girls in the intro. I'm not sure it fits in with our demographic, but I loved that intro, mate. It was so much better than last week, and I feel good for it. Thank you very much.
And now you've set a precedent. He's going to expect this every episode.
I will.
I'm going to have to raise the bar. I shot myself in the foot here. Where am I going to get pyro from? So, gentlemen, we have our first reoccurring segment that we discussed renaming for politically correct reasons, but we're not, because screw the snowflakes. Chris, what are our stupid questions this week?
It's my face on that as well. I mean, this is like, oh, politically correct, screw the snowflakes, here's Chris.
I got cool as snowflake this week.
Okay, let's move on to the first one. And it's something that's, I think we've kind of all asked the question with our fifth episode. What would be top of your realistic targets as a sponsor for this show?
Ooh.
Viagra. I'm looking at you.
Are you leading me down the blue chew rabbit hole? Are you just going to try and make me do the thing that we said we'd never discuss again?
I've heard, I think, 4 proposals, and they should have you as a spokesperson with what you said about Blue Chew. But no, who would you want as a realistic target? I'm not talking about turning around saying, oh, I want Apple. No, I'm talking about realistic.
The problem is, Viagra would be cool, but the problem is my neck gets really stiff.
Oh, God.
That's why this one's curable. No more choking on Viagra. No more choking in the bedroom. Thank you.
Okay, let's start with Simon. Simon. Okay.
Well, first of all, because I'm paralysed from the waist down, Viagra will not get me stiff. Just so you know, it has no impact on me whatsoever. I've tried it. I've been swallowed 100 of them. It does not work.
We could make you like a splint. Or, like, get some cement.
Right. I tell you who I'd love to do it, because there's lots of, like, things out there. I found the greatest Facebook page in the world the other day. So, as you know, I've been working on Sunhill, the new spin-off show from The Bill. And I found the Graham Cole Appreciation Society on Facebook. They've got over 1,000 members. Graham Cole obviously paid PC Tony Stamp, and he's involved with the show at the moment. And he's a fantastic chap, really nice chap. We speak on a weekly basis. And I've got to say that the Graham Cole Appreciation Society are amazing.
Okay, so the Graham Cole Appreciation Society. Okay, that, I mean, that's okay. Realistic. I'm not going to take that away from you, definitely. Let's go with Duncan. Duncan, who would you realistically like to sponsor the show?
You know what? We talked about it on the last episode, and we've had stuff in between. And I do think Colgate would be a really good group to business to get on board. They are taking an interest in sensory needs and disability and trying to fashion their products to do the same. In fact, I bought the augmented reality toothbrushes they do. And me and my daughter and my son actually on this one did a review on my channel of them. They're great. They actually, my son actually remembers to do his teeth now and asks, oh, can I grab my tablet? Can I go and do it? They're brilliant. I think they've got that intention in there. They have, you know, the whole Colgate Ability Network in there. I think they'd be a great to...
You think they fall under realistic? Do you think they would? So let's add a little spin to these stupid questions. This is a secret mission because whoever you say, you have to approach after. What's yours, Adam?
Well, I have thought about this long and hard in the past 5 minutes. And I decided I would like Qwerty as my realistic sponsor for the podcast because Qwerty are where I get all my amazing T-shirts from. For example, today, the cute, cutenesses.
For a serious sponsor, I think we should get Lego. So here's my little logo, which I did.
He's got the little knob thing in his head too. That's wicked.
As well, yeah. Extremely fragile, he does fall apart quite easily, so I'm going to put him down.
Okay, let's move on to the second stupid question. What's the dumbest thing someone has argued with you about? That could be online or face-to-face.
Oh, there's so many. Okay, let me think about this.
I can tell you the best argument I ever won.
No, it's got to be the most stupid. I had one, and it was actually on LinkedIn of all places, and there was a gent that was trying to convince me that gigantic humans existed, that there were 40-meter tall humans that roamed the Earth and showed me a bunch of pictures with these giant skeletons. Of course, it was a stupid argument, a silly argument that he was never going to win. Who's next?
One I had in America is they didn't believe me that we drove on the left-hand side of the road.
Wow.
Yeah. They thought, you know, how could that work? It went on for far too long than realistically should. Even when I showed him pictures and videos of the motorway on the M1, he still didn't believe me. He said I had it in reverse.
Can I ask a question with that, though? How did this argument come about? Because I'm wondering whether you were on the left-hand side of the road over there and you'd crashed into him and then you were trying to explain to him, look, in my country, we drive on the left.
We were in a bar in New York and we were talking about how things are different in America to the idea of like nappies and diapers and sellotape and sticky tape and things like that. And he just came up and he didn't believe me. And he left not believing me, which was really strange.
Let's hope he doesn't come over here and drive then.
Yeah, absolutely. Dangerous man. Dangerous man. But that's how some Americans think. They are so that the America is everything and all that they don't think anything outside the other, you know, there's what, 204 countries in the world and America's just one of them. And you know, people think that nothing exists outside America.
Hello to all our American listeners.
Okay, let's move on. Let's go with Adam. What's the dumbest thing someone has argued with you about? You must have some great ones.
I don't argue that much, gentlemen. As a flaccid man with no opinions that could be deemed controversial. What was it? I think after my documentary about freak shows came out, I got people just like saying, oh my word, you've endorsed bullying and whatever. Like, it's a program hosted by me about freak shows. We called it Adam Pearson. It's literally the John Ronstill of documentary titles. And I don't know what you want from me. So people have a go at me about that. Then they did some research. Like, oh my word, he also cast the Undateables, a program that says disabled people are undateable. We film them dating! Like, if that's what we're doing. We're doing it terribly. Like, oh my word. Oh, I don't like that program. You're watching, watch it! Like, no one doesn't like it. You know every intimate detail about it. And maybe, just throwing this out there, if you spent less time bitching and more time not bitching, you might not be actually on date with Jesus. Oh, oh.
I feel like I've opened a can of worms here.
Really have.
this is like therapy at this point.
Yeah, welcome to therapy.
And I have it all the time because clearly, current company excluded, my friends are idiots. Are Jaffa cakes or biscuits? Like, it's been to court. We don't need to debate this. Exactly. It's not the cakes. It's there. It's in the statute. Why are we having this conversation? Not wasting my time and buy me a drink.
Okay, let's put the lid back on and move over to Duncan. Duncan.
I think the stupidest ones, when you get into the people who genuinely believe anti-vax stuff and get into that, it is just... there's just so much proof out there that it's bollocks and that it's fine. And they're quite willing to risk the entire, you know, safety of the entire world and population because they hang on to outdated ideas that have been disproven and the people who come up with them are struck off. That really bugs me.
The last couple that I've seen, the first one, which was disproven, was a drive-in vaccination centre. And basically the nurse or the doctor comes along and injects and then sort of snaps away. So the anti-vaxxers, what happened to the needle? What happened to the needle? And then the doctor jumps on and goes, well, this is the needle they used and it's retractable. So as soon as it's done, it retracts back in. So it reduces the danger, of obviously hitting the injection itself. The second one was magnets on the arm, which infuriates me because they get a magnet, they stick it on their arm and say, I've just had the vaccination, what's in this? Sticky tape, or the fact that you've got slightly sweaty skin that you just put it on the top of your arm. They are attention seekers. That is the end all. They used to think the earth was flat. They believe there's lizard people. And now they moved over to anti-vax because it gets them the most attention. Let's move on before I blow my top. That's another show. Right, so third stupid question. What's the saddest scene in a movie or TV series that you've seen?
Figure this right down.
Yeah.
Come on, I want to see some tears.
Right, now, honestly, I sobbed for half an hour. I was a grown man with tissues with my wife sitting there absolutely sobbing my socks off uncontrollably. It was the film, it's The Bloody Notebook. Not The Bloody Notebook.
He's got it. No, I was taking mine out. The horror version of The Notebook. It's horrible.
It's the sequel to Pride and Prejudice and Zombies.
absolutely agree.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's that scene at the end where you got James Gardner and the other woman, who I can't remember her name, she's got dementia, and she comes back for 20 minutes, every day after he's read the whole story, and she comes back, and then she forgets again,
yeah,
and she's got to be sedated. And it had me in floods of tears. And then, obviously, I won't spoil the end, because, you know, I won't. But, it just had me sobbing. Like, I've never really cried at a film like I did with The Notebook.
The acting was phenomenal. I'm not talking the younger were all right, but those two actors portraying the older, unbelievable. And I'm a 38-year-old grown man. I was sobbing In fact, I've never watched it twice because I'm afraid of that scene. Adam, what is the saddest scene you've seen in a movie or TV series?
Well, first and foremost, for those of you that had the notebook on your Grumpy Gits bingo cards, and no, me either, but you can tick it off. Amazing. But for me, and I don't know if any of you have seen it, but there's this opening montage at the start of Disney's Up that's just so rude.
Yes. Disney films, what is it that every Disney film is the most, has the single most depressing scene in history, and they seem to try and up it with each one, no pun intended. But it's just ridiculous.
What, no, Up really, really got me. Like, yeah. I can no sell the Mufasa death scene in The Lion King. Whereas Disney's Up, just the kind of how they met and then growing up and getting married. And then it just takes a turn. And you're like, oh my word. I'm only like, and it's only like 10 minutes into the film.
It is a heart wrencher, that one.
I've got it for me. Up was a big letdown after that 10 minutes. See what I did there?
Oh, God. Although we should give him credit. I mean, Duncan, you made it. Just a bad a joke, and we kind of praised yours, so I think we're kind of picking on Simon here. Duncan, what's your answer with this one?
I would have to say, I think The Lion King.
The Lion King.
When Mufasa dies, and I can't watch that scene. I really can't. I don't know what, I'm a grown-ass man who just can't watch that scene. It's just too heart-wrenching.
I am going to add one more to this list, because it did get me at the cinema, and I think I was about 15 at the time, and that was Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country, because I'm a huge Star Trek fan, and we knew that it was the original cast's final film, and what it is, they sign off at the end, they do their signatures on screen, and when it was coming up, I was like, oh my God, it's the last time we're ever going to see them, and then I started crying in the cinema.
I shouldn't laugh, sorry. That's a great Star Trek fact.
That is all weird. Well, since we're all having two, I took my best friend Roxy to go and see Toy Story 3. And I'd already seen it, so I sort of knew what was coming. She had no idea. And there's that moment where Lotso and Big Baby have their face off. And we're not just like, she hated you, Big Baby. And we're just like, no, she just lost you. That's all it is. And she's just losing her mind. I'm like, oh my word. She's going to have a full-blown panic attack in the cinema. And that was the stupid question segment that will be back. I'm not changing the name. Stop tweeting me. Gentlemen, this weekend was the Cavalcade of Glory that was the Eurovision Song Contest. I was so happy. Did we watch it? How did we all find it?
I'll start, sorry. I didn't watch it, so I bow out, okay?
Why do you hate happiness, Chris?
I don't. I've watched Eurovision once, and it just wasn't my cup of tea. I watched the Will Ferrell movie, which I thoroughly enjoyed, but Eurovision, it just doesn't do it for me. It's like a serious X Factor. And
I to me, I'm not against happiness. I'm just for music.
I mean, I wasn't as offensive as that, but
I thought you'd have loved the winner. When I was watching like Italy and I think it was Finland, I was like, Duncan's going to be all about this.
Yeah, I saw you. I'm going to have to go and check that out just because it does sound like it's actually my kind of thing. I just can't. I don't know. Eurovision to me is kind of the punchline to a bad joke. I just can't get into it.
I'm here to the rescue. I thought it was absolutely amazing. I mean, it's so bad, it's brilliant.
You glorious mammal.
So the thing is about it is I didn't like the winning song. Okay, I thought Greece or Portugal would do better. I mean, we knew the UK were going to get Nil Pra. Okay, However, the performance from the UK was so bad as well. Is that not only did we get nil poir from Europe and the judges, we got nil poir from the rest of the Europe as well. So it was a good way of, excuse my language, saying a big fuck you to everyone else, to Europe, to the UK. So we knew we were going to come last, but I thought we'd get something from the judges and we didn't, and that's how bad we were. So that, yeah. But, you know, it was fun, it was entertaining, but in 20 years' time, people are not going to remember who the winners are. People are going to remember that while they were interviewing Malta, they switched to the Italian winners, and one of them was possibly snorting cocaine on live TV. That's what they're going to be remembered for.
Yeah, aren't they getting investigated as well? I saw a news article that they're getting investigated.
He agreed to take a drug test to say he wasn't taking cocaine. He probably was taking cocaine. So I don't know how he's going to get away with that, because it looks like he is snorting a lot. completely switch of the story. This actually happened to me a couple of years ago.
I'm very well, thank you, but I just want to point out I don't do cocaine.
Funny story. So,
whatever he says now, I'm going to cut it all so it just says this happened to me a couple of years ago.
We'll just insert that bit in the beginning that says I didn't do cocaine.
I'm very well, thank you, but I just want to point out I don't do cocaine.
It's always cocaine with you, Simon. If you can transition to any story from cocaine, it's concerning.
It's one of those unfortunate incidences where you go out and you've got a load of white pound around your nose.
I'm very well, thank you, but I just want to point out I don't do cocaine.
He's making this so easy post edit, isn't he? This is so.
Now, so what is?
I just sneezed in the bakery. This is all it was.
Unfortunately, now and again, I've got to wear incontinence pads, which give me a nappy rash, okay? And I'm not ashamed about saying that. It's just a fact of life, okay? And this is the time when my podcast called Wild Disabled was taking off. I was interviewing Adam, I was interviewing Tanner Gray Thompson, so on and so forth. I was traveling around the UK, Canes. And you know when you get to know people at your local corner shop and you have a chat with them, don't you? And I walked in there, and this is just after I've had changed myself, gone to pick up some milk, and I had to get some towel on, and I rubbed my nose like that, didn't I?
I was waiting for how talcum powder ends up around his neck. You've kind of, I'm thinking, what has he done here? How's he going to put this together?
So I go to the shop, and she goes, and what the person behind the desk, bless you, goes, well, I listened to your podcast, Simon, and are you like hobnobbing with too many celebrities? And I went, what? And she goes, yeah, you got a lot of white powder around your nose.
It's reminding me of the IT crowd when he's got the chocolate on his forehead.
As I said at the start, I do not do cocaine, never have, never will.
Well, it's not making it in, you know. Yeah.
Oh, so cocaine cures nappy rash. Who knew? And the German entry, Graham Norton's description of the German entry was, this song is Marmite if everyone hated Marmite.
And he's still got more points than us.
I know.
I've heard this, that there's just some kind of Eurovision hatred of England. And it doesn't matter how good England is. Clearly, this year, not good. But it doesn't matter. You know, we could put on flipping Elton John and it would still not get any votes.
And well,
Bailey, they're putting a petition in to get Bill Bailey. And he said, if you need me, I'll be there.
I'd watch.
And moving on very quickly. Duncan, we have an interview, don't we? You've gone out and got us a bit of a cheeky chappy to talk to.
Well, I don't. What actually happened is a couple of years ago, I was at an Alter Bridge concert, and as it was, I was the chap behind me was in a wheelchair. He was there with his dad, and we just got chatting and friended him on Facebook, And he's an awesome guy. He's a massive, massive heavy metal fan. But he's now gone into disability advocacy, and schools and anything like that can help with making environments more accessible and friendly to those with disabilities. And I got chatting to him over this and said, I'd love to interview you. And it turns out he's a big fan of Adam Pearson. And so we managed to get it. So Adam and myself got the chance to interview Josh Reeves. So here is that interview. Okay, so here we are. I want to, of course, Adam, thank you for joining us, mate.
Always a pleasure. Never a chore, gentlemen.
And I want to welcome Josh Reeves. Now, Josh, we met. I've got to get this out of the way because you, myself and Adam have one binding love, which is Alter Bridge.
Yeah, yeah. It's just the riffs and the vocals of Miles Kennedy and Mark Tremonti that that lets me get on with my life when I'm feeling low and when I'm feeling happy as well. And Alter Bridge have always done helped me through a certain stuff growing up. Many of the songs have actually helped me to fight for disability rights as well. I'll get through that shortly as well. But it's just that having Alter Bridge out there and having fans that want to talk about disability as well is pretty cool.
Because we met at the Alter Bridge concert in Cardiff.
Yeah, and that was fun because I didn't really know you. I was just trying to like...
You just happened to be behind me in the queue.
Yeah, yeah. And I was just talking to everyone because I love conversations with new people. I like to like meet new people, make friendships, and that's what I do. I just love the Outbridge community as well.
It's a really strong community, isn't it? And there is a real family. I know that's often touted, sort of, we like that, but genuinely with Alter Bridge, Tremonti, Miles Kennedy, / all that whole conglomeration of fans, there's this huge sort of sense of family associated with it. I think it's incredible. And I definitely feel the same thing. I've met so many cool people because we just started chatting. And that was a really rare event for me because I'd never go to concerts on my own. I'm usually with someone, and I was supposed to be meeting someone there, but it all got sort of waylaid. But it was actually the coolest thing because I got talking to you and your dad, and I got talking to a whole bunch of other people, and it was just one of the highlights. I got to meet Mark.
Yeah,
the family thing.
And you are the coolest Facebook picture ever. So,
for those who haven't seen my Facebook cover photo, it's me and Mark. We'll put it up here. You can have a look. Adam, where did your love for Alter Bridge come from?
I got into Alter Bridge through wrestling. One of the wrestlers had Metalungus as his theme music. And I was like, this tune's a banger. Googled it, found out who it was, and then went out and bought the album.
Yeah.
Because it's off their first album, One Day Remains. And then I kind of just really got into that album. And then I was good friends with the guy that managed HMV in Brighton when I was at uni there. And we'd go to like the same sort of like rocky metal-y pubs and what have you. And then he just won me a text one day and went, we just got Blackbird in. If you swing by, I'll get it to you early. And I was like, hell's to the yes. So I got hold of Alter Bridge, Blackbird. I think I got it a week early.
That's awesome.
That's cool.
I've got that tattooed to my leg.
Well, I've actually got that tattooed now. I don't know if you could see it properly.
Oh yeah.
I've got the Blackbird for there. So
that's I haven't got Alter Bridge under it, but that's the same as my calf tattoo. I love it. Yeah. So that's about you. You've talked a lot about that. Music's been a bit, especially heavy metal and rock. Been a big part of you. I mean, you were saying that Alter Bridge have helped you to sort of fight for what you believe in as far as disability awareness and advocacy goes. Which songs in particular, is there anything that's really resonated?
Well, for me, obviously, Isolation. Isolation came out when I was...
The last 2 years.
yeah, yeah. Well, that's not, that was bad because everybody's going, isolation is this year's song. And like, no, it's not. The isolation was actually meant to be out in 2011 because I was being isolated in school at that point. And that's when I realized that I need to do something and make myself not isolated because of discrimination in the school that I was at the time. So that made me realize that I need to go out there and educate children on disability because I don't want no other child to be isolated the way I was in school. And just the lyrics and that just helped me get back up and fight for stuff and make it right. For example, just the AB3 album, Make It Right, that's another song that pushes me. And I know that sometimes when I've been patronized or whether people are giving me sympathy towards my disability or whether there's society is not accessible, whether there's a parked cars on pavements and stuff, I'm always like, I've got to play my champion because it's helped me fight and to change people's perspectives, mindsets, and the way that they think about disability and to change the way that society is towards disabled people.
Absolutely. What is your disability specifically? I don't want it to define
you. Yeah, it's all right. It's all right. So I've got cerebral palsy. So obviously when I was born, I didn't know I had cerebral palsy until I stood up and I kept on collapsing down. So my mum knew that it was something wrong. So took me to the doctors and they basically diagnosed me with cerebral palsy. With having a disability, I just don't see no different. Do you know what I mean? With disabled people that might have had an injury or become disabled midway through life, and they might see the world, their world, different to mine. But I just look at myself in the mirror and I just see a guy just sitting on his ass and changing the world. I don't see myself as a disabled person. I don't like to be called disabled. I just don't like labels. I just think that,
which is that, I guess that's the reason for, I mean, you've really moved into disability advocacy, and your Facebook page is called Don't Call Me Special. Is that feeding into that? Is that inspired by that?
Yeah, so Don't Call Me Special. So when I was in school, this is a lot about the school I was in, and this is what made me into a campaigner. But then there's other stories that led me into educating children as well. So what happened in school is that I was being called a special all the time. You have to go to the, he's got special needs, it's okay if we haven't got a hoist here for him or a lift and stuff. He's got special needs, he could just go down to the library and do work. So I dropped my GCSE history because they wouldn't fix the lift for me because there was only like several wheelchair users. I just feel like if it made them think like if it's a waste of money, it just took a long time to get fixed. And I was just nagging to them saying, look, I'm a student at your school. I'm exactly the same as everyone else. And I wanted to be a history tour guide, but now I'm a disability rights campaigner. So it's some of it. I'm glad that they did what they did because I wouldn't be here today doing what I do. And obviously going into schools and teaching children about these things, about making sure that every child is actually sitting at the front of the class and the teacher's listening to them and they are actually studying, because I just feel like most of the time as well with disabled people in mainstream schools is that they are getting their one-to-one to teach that student when it should be the tutor or the teacher not the one-to-one teaching.
It's basic human rights, isn't it?
I've always found, and it was just touched upon, that disability is the one area of equality that costs time and money to get right or to fix. Like with the lift, for example. And we can all pretend that we are not racist, not sexist, not homophobic. That's like a sensible email Friday night saying, hey, we've got a new person starting, they won't be right. If we could dial back on the racism, that would be fantastic. But to fix a lift, you've got to fix a lift. You can't have a chat with a lift on Friday and be like, if you could work on Monday, that'd be swell. You've got to put your money where your mouth is. Which is why I think there's so much resistance to it. But that also slightly befuddles me because, and again, this has been touched upon, there's not this mutual exclusivity to disability. And by that, I mean, I'm not going to go to bed tonight as a white CV male and wake up tomorrow as a black lesbian with a passion for Scientology. Whereas disability can happen to anyone at any time. My friend Lee Ridley, Lost Boys guy, says that there are two types of people, disabled people and people that will be disabled. And so I think if we can come at it from a much more empathetic approach rather than words, labels and condescension, I think that's a real good start, particularly in mainstream education.
Josh, what is it that you're specifically moving into, I guess, educating people about disability and promoting that understanding? For you, what is it that you're doing at the moment that's pushing that? What have you chosen to do?
So when I teach children and adults, I teach college students as well, and I do teacher training as well, which I've done at many colleges. I've also been to Antigua, which I want to get into that as well. But from answering your question there is that I teach about the social model and medical model of disability, letting them know that obviously society is the could be the barrier, and then obviously the medical model is just that understanding that doctors and nurses use the medical model, but I prefer the social model because I see that society is making me disabled due to that it's not accessible for my disability and not for me as an individual to access my community to go out and do whatever I want. I've got to make sure I've got a hoist to get me out of bed. If there's no hoist, then I am disabled because I can't move out of bed. That's what disabled is. Disabled means that you can't move. I can move along if the reasonable adjustments and the equipment is there that I need to live my day-to-day life.
How can people get in touch with you if they're interested in getting you into their school or college or whatever? How can they reach out to you, mate?
So they can reach out to me by going on my Facebook page. So that's www.facebook.com/don'tcallmespecial. Or they
will put a link in the description. So if you go and look in the description for this video, you'll see it in there on YouTube and on everything. So, yeah.
And they could also reach out to me on Twitter, which is DCMSCampaign. Or you can email me on reevesjosh66@gmail.com. And I'm also a YouTuber, so I'm going to plug in there as well. So obviously I'm Joshua Reeves on YouTube, and I do videos on disability-related topics. So I've done one on hate crime, two on COVID, and one on patronizing disabled people and why it needs to stop. So you could check out them. They knew I have got some old stuff on there, talking about how I went to Antigua and how I've been working with the BBC Sesh doing some videos on there as well. But yeah, if you are interested, please get in touch.
Tell me about Antigua, because I've never been, and I'm thinking about it.
Yeah, Antigua, it's a great place. And the reason why I went to Antigua is because I got called upon from my old college that knew that was in talks with the High Commissioner, and they wanted someone to go out there to teach their adults and their people out there about disability awareness and the terminology as well, because they still use the word like spaz and handicapped and cripple. And I was just like, you need to just start calling me a person with a disability, or even if you don't want to use the international word, just call me a wheelchair user.
You could just Why not just call you a person?
Yeah.
This is what drives me, is that we've talked about this on previous Grumpy Gits episodes, is this urge and almost requirement that people have to label first, you know, so people will put their Twitter as I am, you know, I can't talk for myself, but, you know, for Adam, it's Adam Pearson, and then it would be, you know, all of the things that would qualify him as disabled. It's like, it doesn't need to be that. You're a human first, and that's what really needs to come out. Because I think the more we focus on people's disability in that way, the more it becomes a disability. That's why I love Simon's little take on its ability access, because it's about the ability that you have as much as it is the disability.
Well, I think often we confuse disability with inability, and they're two very different things. And we need to get very good at having conversations to, again, pull those things apart and set them apart in isolation. And that feeds back into what Simon's doing rather well at ability access. But I don't like that. One time in America, and I don't know how I didn't kick off, Duncan, you'd have been so proud of me. I got called I got called handy capable.
What?
And then sort of like my inner sassy woman came out, and I was like, oh no, you didn't. But I bit my tongue. I said thank you. and we all moved on. I didn't skip, but that's for damn sure.
So what happened at Antigua, Josh?
A funny story. So the reason I want to mention this is because I want you with me on it, Adam, because it was just the way I said it back as well. So in Antigua they've got like one place, one care home, I should say, for disabled people, where all the disabled people are kept there in that one particular area. Now, a lot of family people in Antigua don't know how to handle disability. So I had someone come up to me and said to me, oh, if my son or daughter was disabled, I think that I would play with witchcraft or I've done something about like with the devil. She said, did your mother play with a Ouija board? And I said, yeah, she did actually. She's actually told me that. So I'm like, shit. Because that's what they think. But obviously, yeah, I don't believe that at all.
Adam and Simon are actually going to be doing a series on the History Channel about this.
So yeah, we're doing the hidden history of disability and looking into things like kind of superstition and old wives' tales. I pitched a documentary years ago. Okay. We're still pitching it, looking specifically at religious attitudes towards disability, both doctrinally and socially. And I reckon our working title might have been a bit too strong in retrospect. Shut yourself in, Duncan. We called it Which God Hates Me Most. And a lot of commissioners were fascinated yet terrified of the title.
That's brilliant. That's brilliant.
Answer, Scientology.
I definitely gonna watch that. Yeah, you should definitely let me know if that does come into production, because I would really love to see that title, go ahead.
Can you imagine the complaints? like I'm not already unpopular on Twitter.
Yeah. Yeah, you
just see Ofcom just hiring a whole load of new people just to cope.
You would just be the like next Piers Morgan.
He tweeted me happy birthday this year, which was great.
Josh, it has been an absolute pleasure talking to you, mate. And I think just awesome stuff. And I love, and it was the first thing, when I got to meet you the first time, it was just a very natural conversation. And I love that it was just, it really highlighted the fact that you're Josh, and yeah, that's what people should take forward. And I love what you're doing. We'll put all the links to Josh's stuff in the description. So his Facebook, his Twitter, his YouTube.
Thank you. And if you've learned anything from this interview, it's the answer to most problems in life is Alter Bridge. There we go. Transitioning nicely into the world of companies and accessibility. Simon Sampson, I think you'll agree with me that the one downside to wheelchairs is they can't fly.
What I'm seeing more and more of on Ability Access is people are sending me videos of airlines breaking people's wheelchairs, damaging people's wheelchairs because they don't have to transport them. And so what airlines don't understand is a wheelchair is not a vehicle, it's people's legs. It's how they get around. Whether it's got, I mean, I've got an electric wheelchair behind me, I've also got a manual wheelchair, I've got a hospital wheelchair, and I can't go anywhere without them. And it's just that they just keep on ignoring the issue and treat them as luggage rather than a medical necessity. So if, for example, I go to the airport, I've got to take my catheters, my CPAP machine, lots of medication, you know, and they put a whole sticker on it in the suitcase, and it's a bright orange sticker that says, medical equipment, please be careful. Okay. It says handle with care. When I put in my scooter or my wheelchair or whatever I'm traveling on that day, what I need to travel in, okay, they just take it off me, transfer me to the chair and throw it in a hold. Okay. And when I went to New York with British Airways, my wheelchair was fully operational. It was absolutely fine. Got to the other end and I had a flat tire when they passed it back to me. And this is outside the air, this is directly out when I stepped, well, I say stepped off, when I rolled off the, the plane to, you know, the little walkway that you go on between the, yeah. So they delivered my scooter back to me and it had a flat tire. Now, this meant that it wouldn't move. So I was completely stranded. And rather than them trying to assist me, all they wanted to do is get me out of the airport and get me to my hotel. Well, that wasn't helpful because I needed my scooter repairing for the flat tire. So they didn't take any responsibility for it. What they did instead is when they dropped us off at the hotel, which I had to get a taxi for, they didn't help us to the taxi. They just helped us out of the airport and basically left me and my wife there with the luggage and a broken scooter. We got to the hotel. Luckily, the hotel had what they call a manual evac, so they had to go and get the manual evac to get me into the hotel, but that means I couldn't get around the hotel at all. So we lost 2 days trying to hire a scooter to be delivered to our hotel room in New York. And it was just one of those things where, you know, if the hotel were really good because they said, if you wanted to come down to the restaurant, we'll get security to come and get you an evac chair to bring you down to the restaurant. Well, it means I still can't go out in New York for 2 days because we had to find a hire company to deliver a new scooter to us. Then we had to also try and organise a repair of my other scooter as well while on holiday in New York and while with Ever Business. And it was just absolutely obscene. And there was no support for us at all. There was no backup solution. Now, when I complained to British Airways, they did pay the extra money it cost us, because it cost us £500, because we were there for 10 days doing some work of a holiday, it cost us $500 to rent another scooter for that time while we're there. So there's also the added extra cost of that. We did get that back eventually from British Airways, but we had to fight it because they weren't taking responsibility for this. And what I'm seeing is there are more people showing these videos. There was one a little while ago of a bloke crawling outside, you know, through a terminal because the airline broke his wheelchair. And this one is for Delta Airlines, the one that's just been up recently on Twitter. of a woman saying, well, she doesn't want to transfer into a hospital, so not a hospital, into an airline wheelchair because she can't make herself independent. She can't get around. So what she wants to do is be taken up to the airplane in her own wheelchair and then transferred in there, which is what should happen. And it's becoming more and more common where they don't see it as a medical necessity. They see it as an inconvenience. And if they break them, which they often do, puts people off, like myself, flying, because they just don't take the care that is needed for this essential medical equipment, and they just see it as luggage.
First of all, that sticker they put on it saying medical equipment handled with care. Shouldn't they be handling everything with care?
It's a conveyor belt, though, isn't it, to airlines? The faster they can get you through. And there's a clear divide as well. When you think, when you go to catch a plane, you've got your check-ins and everything else, the face of the company. So you go in and you've got people handing out different bits and bobs, trying to portray this well-run company. But then you've got your baggage handlers, and they're kind of in the back, not really seeing.
Yeah,
it's down to simple training.
It does put you off wanting to fly. And I'm hopefully doing it at a TV show called Hidden History soon with the History Channel, hopefully. And we've got to travel to about 7 or 8 countries. And flying on, that's 14 flights there and back. So I am extremely anxious about, is my equipment going to survive the trip through all the different airlines? And looking at the videos that have been posted on social media from airplane windows of specialist wheelchairs being manhandled and falling apart, and mine being delivered back to me with flat tires, you are completely reliant on those baggage handlers to do a decent job, and the confidence isn't there.
There's no accountability. In fact, they don't even put forward the accountability with these airlines. In fact, I would expect this to a certain degree from someone like Ryanair, a cheap airline that just wants to throw customers, pick up that small. But someone like British Airways, I would have thought there was a clear chain of command where it's well-oiled machine, where something like that happened to you just shouldn't happen at all, not with the way they do things.
To play devil's advocate on the issue of accountability, the baggage handlers more than likely will work for the airport rather than the airline.
Oh, right, okay.
So is the airport responsible or is the airline responsible?
Oh, the airlines are outsourcing to the airport. So if the airline is the face of the customer service side of it, that's who needs to take responsibility. And then they need to chase it up with the airport. That's their relationship. Your relationship's with the airline. And that's where you're going to be going to complain and say, hey, this has happened. So they need to fix it quickly. And then it's their responsibility to take it up with their relationship with the airport, because they are two separate things.
It's a bit like your internet, though, isn't it? I mean, BT own the whole network.
Yeah.
But you don't call BT Openreach. You call whoever's providing your internet, don't you? And that's get in touch. But, yeah, I do think there's a division. And I don't think the baggage handlers particularly care if they're not being reprimanded by their bosses or anybody else. I think it's disgusting.
Yeah.
Can I be that guy that throws out a business idea that we should set up a chain of wheelchair repair shops at every arrivals lounge at every airport?
I think it's more concerning that you want to set up a wheelchair repair shop at every airport lounge.
It would have certainly saved you 2 days of your holiday, Simon. So I don't know what you're moaning about.
I can't quite.
Great idea. It,
but there's something offensive about Adam's idea. I can't understand why. Is he capitalizing on these people? But he's offering a service to fix it.
What we initially charge the customer, and then we go after the airline to recoup the money on behalf of the customer. So we also have a legal wing.
This is getting a little bit expensive now, to be fair.
And the lawyer's next door. So you have your wheelchair people, you got your lawyer next door to them. So as you're leaving the airport, you can take care of everything.
Yeah. We got Simon Adams wheelchair repair shop. And then next door we've got really good lawyers to take care of all our admin. And finally, I love this segment so much. Because if you think our country's messed up, well, weird news around the world will make you feel a little bit better until our Prime Minister says something on TV again. Chris, what have you got for us?
The headline, I've been posting my letters in the dog poo box for 2 years. and unfortunately, bless him, a 91-year-old Alf Spence got the nearby dog waste box and the post box mixed up, and he didn't realise for 2 years until somebody pointed it out when they saw him take a letter and post it in.
I mean, if that's not a brown letter day, I don't know what is.
He's got it.
Air horn sound effects. Air horn sound effects. Brilliant question. 3, 2, 1.
Was he complaining about shit service?
I don't know. So yeah, he got the two mixed up. They were quite close to each other, and unfortunately he's been posting all his letters in the dog poo box.
What happened if he said return to sender? I mean, surely he would have noticed if it was covered in a load of shit.
I don't think the postman was checking the dog poo.
No.
don't worry, I won't leave that bit in. It's fine.
Oh no, leave it in.
I think you should as well.
Not all disabled people are heroes. Some are just idiots. So leave it in. Well, yeah. Gentlemen, as always, it's been a real pleasure. I'm sorry for the 2 days of your life. This one's going to cost you, Chris, just to break the fourth wall. For you at home, this has been maybe an hour of sort of like light entertainment. For Chris, this has been about 2.5 hours of, oh my God, did you please stop talking? We can't leave that in. But it's always a real pleasure to come in and hang out with you guys. And I'm glad we're doing this and that we're finding our feet and all getting to know each other a little bit better. And I now consider the three of you very, very good friends of mine. So always a pleasure. Episode 5, all in the can. If, however, in the gap between episode 5 and episode 6, people want to talk to you and find out what the happenstancery of your lives are, where can they find you, Mr. Duncan?
At PDA Dad UK. PDA Dad UK. That is my Twitter handle.
And Chris, where can people find your good self?
I don't want to give mine out. I'm antisocial. I'm a hermit. I don't want to meet people. This is the most I speak to people a week. But if I'm pushed, actually, I haven't been on Twitter quite a lot. The Real Grump Dad.
And last, but by no means least, but it's going to take the longest, that's for damn sure. Simon, where can people find you?
Everywhere. Ability Access, hashtag ability, at Ability Access 1 on Twitter, at Simon Sansom, and Ability Access on Facebook.
Amazing. And you can find me at Adam_Pearson. Huge success yesterday. We got all the way to 20K. Thank you to everyone who's been listening and following the Grumpy Gits journey. We love you. We appreciate you. And we'll see you all next time.